guys from 372 pages we'll never get back. And we're excited, as always. This is like Christmas, when you come down from Christmas and you see the tree and the presents are torn open and you realize a burglar's in the house. It's like that. That's what reading an Ernest Cline book is like. And so I am Michael J. Nelson, and this is Connor Listoka. Connor, how do you feel?
Dad's in the corner, in the Santa costume still from the night before. The beard is off. The liquor bottle is like to the side of him. He didn't even see the burglar come in and swipe everything, as he just had been out. He was at his mistress's house the night before. That's what Christmas in April feels like when it's Kleinsmas in Kleinperl.
The dad is doing the Darren McGavin in Christmas Story, where he's like clearly hungover. He keeps going.
Pretending to know that what was in the presents when the kids unwrap them, it says from mom and dad. Yeah. What's that? Overalls. Those will look smart on you, champ.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
No, this is, I'm excited, because obviously, you know, this guy, Ernest Cline, is where this whole endeavor started way back when.
The founder of our feast.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the last time we did one of these, I think, was October of 2020. So even that is, that was when Ready Player 2 came out, as I recall.
Wow.
I remember, you know, cracking the book for the first time down at my parents' house in North Carolina, where we had made a little getaway. And that's just it, that they, you mark these moments, you know, in your life by Ernest Cline novels, you know?
You know what I had in my mind yesterday? I was like trying to think of that very thing. And I'm like, oh, we did his Mars book. I was like, oh, that was that's his protege. So yes. Similar, yes. About writing women and all of that. So,
on that note, we're going to have a Ernest Cline book with a woman protagonist. So it's exciting to see how that all shakes up. And it's a young adult book, or a middle grade book?
Is there something other than a YA? It's called a middle grade?
Yeah, I think it's just all boils down to, you know, there's a few distinct, like there's like the hard and fast rules for these. You can't just write something and be like, yeah, it's for young adult. It's like the protagonist has to be this age, and then it has to be this word count. And middle grade, I think, is just a little below that. The protagonist is a bit younger, probably fewer words. But I'm excited because this is one of those two, meaning it's meant for younger readers, unlike Ernest Cline's book, where a high schooler was so good at video games that they sent him to the moon to fight aliens and eat Cheetos.
So, that was a serious novel for adults, ladies and gentlemen.
Adults were sitting down, they were reading it, they were saying,
that's book of the year, says pretty much everyone at the time.
So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see if how different that type of writing is. And also, of course, how reliant he is on the Kleinian tropes of references and 80s and hot moms and you're feeling a goofy grin moving all over your face as something happens,
and certain acts to ducks being referenced many times probably out of the league of middle grade book, I would say.
Yeah, unless he decides to take a heel turn halfway through it. But it seems like he resides in Texas, so he's going back to his roots by setting this book there. And I don't know, maybe this is just sort of the book he'd always been wanting to write, and then these successes, the Spielberg movie afforded him the ability to do this passion project, maybe. And
I did think of it in terms of, the opening chapter, a bat cave, Spielberg's camera coming across a thing and then going down in, who's Zygmunt, whatever, the guy who just did like Ripley, who did Vanilla Ice's movie as well.
Yep.
I think he won the Academy Award for Lincoln, as you recall, for cinematography. Sure. He's doing the cinema. So it was hard not to read the book and think of Spielberg just licking his chops, going, I can't wait to get to this material. This is going to be so good.
Right. Spielberg is, I'm pretty sure, no longer accepting the phone calls. He did make headlines. There was one of those official-looking Twitter accounts that posts like, Ready Player 2 confirmed by Spielberg. And the, you know, if you ever look at it, it was just a, you know, someone hassling him on a red carpet. He was like, yeah, I'm not directing that one. That's, you know, sure, I'm producing it by obligation of having my name on the first one. But like, don't, please, no more questions about that.
Stevie, baby, how did you get through my spam filter?
it's called Bridge to Bat City. It came out yesterday. And we did our best to sort of, you know, clear our schedules, cancel every meeting we had with Spielberg to sit down and read the first three chapters of it. And it's going to be obviously a little shorter because of that. But we have some dumb sentences from our listeners. We have a few emails. And even at the last minute, people sent in some realer fans.
Oh, God, I thought I'd get away with it. I thought this was just a sous-son, just a preview.
There's only a couple, but we'll see how. It's, who knows?
This could, it starts.
It could be even.
I have no information.
But it's Clyde. You're familiar with his tricks, his bag of tricks.
Well, we'll get to it, but I have a theory on that.
Ooh.
It's. I feel like it's Klein.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
it's Klein in the sense that all of the Hardy Boys were written by Franklin W. Dixon.
Wow.
So we'll anyway. Let's okay. Let's get into it.
Well, sure. We'll get to it, and it's because it starts with a chapter called "The Big Old Beautiful Cave." Hope you like that phrase.
Yeah, get used to that phrase.
You'll be hearing it a lot, and it starts with a chapter that's narrated by a unspecified, you know, person, maybe. And it uses that phrase, the big old beautiful cave, repetitively. I'll just read you the first two sentences. Once upon a time down here in Texas, in part of the Lone Star State known as the Hill Country, hidden at the edge of a rolling green forest, there was this big old beautiful cave. And this big old beautiful cave happened to be home to a big old beautiful mess of bats. So, you know, unlike, I think, all the other books he's written, he's trying something here with a repetitive phrase. And maybe that's because it's, you know, a children's book, sort of, that you could picture a fairy tale starting like that.
I just have to say, how did it strike you? This is petty. I didn't like it. Big old beautiful cave just didn't strike my ear as something. Don't repeat that. You say that once and you go, it's just not right. Cross it out. Find the right term, whatever it is.
It reminded me of Johnny Carson to Ed McMahon when Ed McMahon showed up drunk in that one clip, and Johnny just goes, "You really think you're fooling everybody, don't you? You really think you're fooling one over."
I was there. I went down there. Okay.
Johnny's looking at the camera. Yeah. But yeah, so he really thinks he's fooling people here with this new thing he's doing. And I just think it's sort of a, you know, dumbing it down to tell this fairy tale to these dumb 10-year-olds that I think he's picturing reading his book.
Because our protagonist, that was my question about, you read up, right? When you're young, you want to, if you're 10, you want to read about 16-year-olds or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So this is 13-year-old, so he must be aiming for lower than that. If you're 13, you don't read about 13-year-olds.
True.
I think you try to go, you go a little bit up, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. But also, you know, I read this, and I haven't read them in a long time, but I was just thinking back about, you know, some of the books I read growing up, the Roald Dahl books type of thing like that. And he didn't sort of like condescendingly pat you on the head and be like, now, like you're still forming brains, might not be able to comprehend this. But, you know, he was just sort of telling it straight and being funny and a little mean and stuff like that. He's not just being, and then the big old beautiful cave, Billy Madison's teacher, like, you know, that type of voice is what I was reading it in.
Yeah, where you, those people who get down on the same level as the kids and like, now tell me what your day was like. It's just another human being.
It's describing a bat cave where he says it's a colony of Mexican free-tailed bats, but he thought it was a little heartless to refer to them as a colony when it was plain to see that they were really a family. And I think that's sort of where we're going with this book. We're going to learn about the importance of family because, as we see in the next two chapters, our main character's family is a little shaken from the start of the book.
I would just say that, you know, if I want to learn about families, I'll watch the Fast and the Furious series. I don't need this kind of garbage. I just need to see cars spinning in the air through helicopters and landing onto the decks of ships. That's all I need to see to learn about what a family is, okay?
Eating bugs makes us family.
And the whole chapter is about these bats. It has the bats going out and eating bugs every night. It says to them, all those bugs tasted better than barbecue, which a lot of our listeners took objection with. We can get to that later. But okay. I think you might take objection to a sentence that came soon after that sentence.
Oh, I know most folks are probably revolted by the idea of eating insects. That one?
Well, it came two sentences later, but as an insect
fan.
Oh, yes,
no, this is the first. Know. This was the first sense to me that Klein was involved at all. This could have been written by anyone so far, right?
Sure, sure.
I will say here, I'll just unspool my theory now. There's been, as sort of dumb as it is, and as much as we hate big, old, beautiful, and all of that, this could be anyone writing this. And I feel like it might have been, because Klein usually makes more mistakes than this in just grammar and just clumsy repetitions. Remember the repetition, or just saying one thing in one paragraph and something just different in the other, and it not being caught by the editor, or the editor not caring. This one, at least, it's just like, you know, bat taxonomy sort of spun out in a folksy way, kind of dumbed down. And then, though, then you get to this. Most folks think hot dogs are delicious, including yours truly, so it's probably best we don't judge. Never yuck anyone else's yum, as my mama used to say. Now, I'm picturing this as like Sam Elliott on a chair on a porch somewhere, right?
100% what he's going for, yeah.
Big old mustache and a red man in his cheek.
Uncle Kid from that Cozy Mystery, plagiarized Cozy Mystery we read.
So his mama, let's say he's late 70s.
Yes.
So his mama, so back in the like 30s or whatever, his mama used to say, never yuck anyone else's yum.
Nah, Sam, you never yuck anyone else's yum out there. Now go slap the hogs, it's 4 a.m.
Mom, get off of Instagram. We were running a farm here.
Just to, I mean, we have discussed this. I feel like you are physically revolted when you read those words, that particular phrase.
I am.
I heard it. And the reason for that is because, you know, you're an adult, and that's exactly the getting down on the kid's level to say that type of thing. But I must have heard that for the first time 6 years ago. You know, I never heard that before. You know, like you said, Instagram infantilized grown people to use that type of phrase. Let alone the story which here takes place in the early 80s for the mother who we're saying dies before that. So it just was hard for me to accept that someone in rural Texas would have been saying that.
I do like when you will occasionally present me with a new internet term, infantilizing something in some way or abbreviating something in a way that you know that I will think is utterly repulsive and that you can probably surmise I haven't heard it yet.
Yep.
Certainly haven't inserted it. So you bring it to me like a, you know, like a decaying dog carcass that you found in the woods, and you unwrap it for me. Hey, look at this. Look what I found. And just watch my face as I go, oh, come on.
Yeah, people are saying this. People are doing this out there. It is fun. It's always great to, you know. And now you, of course, haven't heard of this. Of course I haven't, Connor.
Where would I hear this?
You said that this is like a bat taxonomy, and it is. It's sort of like the, there's that Wikipedia version that's like simple English Wikipedia, where it's like, it's you know, I think designed for people who English is not their first language. Sometimes people would send us things like that when we had the bad Wikipedia blog, and I'd be like, we can't use this. This is not, this is not honest, you know. Of course, this is not written to be, but that's sort of what this is, because it talks about bats, how they live upside down. How they're the fastest mammals in the world, which I looked up and verified that, according to some scales, that is true. But they just the infantilizing language where he says, like, their collective body heat would usually keep the whole place nice and toasty warm, and then they would fly back home to the big old beautiful cave to feed their pups and tuck all of them in for the day.
Tuck them in. Yeah, I didn't like that. I also didn't like just the side swipe on, because this is the guy telling it. It's not, I assume, I don't know. I'm just picturing this guy. It could turn out to be a bat. I don't know.
It could turn out to be AI. It could be whatever.
There were always plenty of mean old hawks and dumb old owls. Like, well, you've really put your flag in the ground there, haven't you? What's wrong with the hawks and owls? I love them both. I think they're great.
They're both very cool. I can appreciate all three.
Owls are amazing. Yes. Yeah. I like them all.
I think that that's because they're hunting the bats, and this character has
attachment to them. But calm down there, man. Don't they get to eat? What about the dumb old mosquitoes and insects that you... Why do we have to take sides here?
Yeah, and we're talking about this toasty cave and they're tucking them in for the night. What about the big old beautiful guano pile that's forming a Caleb-esque stalagmite, whatever, growing up from the ground there?
Oh, that's, thick brown soup, yeah.
God. but also at this point in time, a couple pages into this book. It has been exclusively about bats. And to your point, it could have been written by anyone. I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure we're going to get there. But the resistance of any sort of Bruce Wayne or Batman iconography reference, nod, wink, Easter egg, shocking to me. I don't know what to make of it, but we've got to get there.
Well, again, he sort of tips his hat, like he's putting on the Sam Elliott mask, and then occasionally just like peeks, but it's me, Klein. Because as soon as winter was over and the night started to warm back up, the bats would all boogie back to Texas, asterisk, hightailing it north all the way back to the little home in Hill Country. What does that asterisk refer to? Boogie Back to Texas is the title of a great dance song by a band called Asleep at the Wheel. In my head, I always picture the bats all singing that song in unison each spring as they flew north toward the Texas border bound for home. Did you, though? Did you really picture every time, every spring, you'd sit down? The song is 3:30. I looked it up. There was a live version of it.
Okay.
Which, by the way, the band Asleep at the Wheel started to... the video starts with a little banter of, like... You know, they're picking and grinning in the background. And then the main guy who's like, looks like Sam Elliott, big cowboy hat, goes, I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like I want to boogie back to Texas.
Wow. The fog hat slow ride treatment.
Yeah. And the crowd goes like, of course, woo. You hear in the background, you hear the woo.
Nice.
And then he plays just a normal boogie.
Generic boogie song, yeah.
That's why we're boogie back to Texas.
They sort of seem to be like to Texas. Like all, I just their Spotify list. So many songs were about Texas, had Texas in the title. You know, referenced Texas things like Bob Willis and the Texas Playboys. I was like, they're sort of the Red Hot Chili Peppers is to California as the this band is to Texas. It was kind of nice. But yeah, this song
Billy Joel to Long Island, yes. The Boss to New Jersey, Asleep at the Wheel to
Texas. They have this song had 274,000 streams, so substantially more obscure than your typical Klein reference. So
yeah.
That's encouraging to see. But yeah, a footnote is a nice addition to his bag of tricks, because obviously in Ready Player One, this would have just been included in the text, like as an aside for the narrator, telling you this fact.
That's a little strong to give to a kid. You're like, I'm just a kid. I don't really have nostalgia, so you can't just reference it. So I now I've learned after the first one, I can ignore your footnotes. Thank you. You're teaching me by reading. I'm learning.
But then you'd miss this great bat imagery of, what did he say? 100,000 bats all singing this song simultaneously in unison.
Yeah.
Nice.
So. Okay.
And then it says, the bats follow the same routine year after year, century after century, for countless generations, until one summer when a series of wild and weird events, speaking of Johnny Carson.
Wild and weird, weird events.
Began to unfold that would change their lives and mine forever. So that made me think, like, is this the reader? Like, is this the main character, Opal, that we meet in the next chapter? I don't know. Like you said, it has some, the next couple paragraphs are the real Sam Elliott ones. Because I'll just read it to
you.
I know there may be a few folks out there doubt the veracity of this tale, but it did happen. My mama didn't raise no liars. Yeah, I admit I've told a tall tale or two. And I've been known to embellish a bit from time to time, but I was raised to believe that a good story is worthy of a little embellishment. And this here yarn I'm fixing to spin is my absolute favorite by a considerably wide margin. If I can flate a few dates or fudge a few facts, it ain't intentional.
I just had there, and it was just coincidental because we had talked about this. I just said, can I issue a firm settle down there, hee-haw? I woke up with hee-haw on my mind, and I had
just
to...
tell people the dream. I want to see if people... You seem to think it was unremarkable. I thought it was incredible.
It's an unremarkable dream. I'm testifying at some sort of trial, and as I'm getting off the stand, they're like, I want you to return, young man. The judge issues me a stern warning. I know dreams are the most boring thing, but this is the interesting
part.
We
read a 90,000 word book about a maniac's dream. We can spare it. That's true. 45-second version of yours.
So I step off, and I'm hit immediately by this woman who's like, I was impressed by your testimony. I'm a member of the – I'm one of the girls from Hee Haw. And I'm like, Hee Haw? She goes, not the TV show, because she was young. Not the TV show. I'm on a touring group. And I'm like, okay. And then I just left, and that was it. So you figure that one out.
Yeah, exactly.
I have no idea.
Incredible. And then you sent me the intro to Hee Haw, which I assumed it was like, Hee Haw, starring, who are the two guys? One of them I had heard of.
Buck Owens and Roy Clark.
And then the Hee Haw Players. And I thought, I was like, oh, this is a super cut, because... It, you know, I know that Hee Haw ran for shockingly longer than you'd think it would be. I was like, this is a super cut of like too many cooks, and they're just showing all the Hee Haw Players from all the seasons. The introduction of the Hee Haw Players took about 2 minutes, ended with a dog, and then the show began. It was amazing.
It's absolutely real. This is just an episode. So it was like beyond parody where you're like, Willie, the dogsmith Johnson, you know, and then some guy going, whoa, whoa. And then a group of the Wilsons, and then like 60 people standing, you know, with their nudie suits on. Yeah. It just goes on and on and on.
Cornpone, Jenkins, and Sally. But yeah, and then the Hee Haw narrator says, so go ahead and pull up a chair, kick off your boots, and put up your feet. I'll tell all y'all exactly what occurred to the best of my recollections.
Yeah, that's why I suspect it's not the 13-year-old girl, given what we see coming up.
Sure, that's true. And because she isn't, you know, she's born in the 80s, so this must be an older one.
She's classic 80s.
But I just liked the, this is when I went back. I was like, just to remember who this actually guy is, I looked up some of Ernest Cline's poetry.
Oh, dear.
So it's like this. Okay. Just remember that this guy who's saying, kick off your boots and put up your feet, is the guy who wrote, you can have the whole cheerleading squad. I want the girl in the tweed skirt and the horn-rimmed glasses. Betty Finnabowski, the valedictorian. Oh, yes. First, I want to copy her trig homework, and then I want to make mad, passionate love to her for hours and hours until she reluctantly asks if we can stop because she doesn't want to miss Battlestar Galactica.
That's his poem, you say?
That was his poem. That was his nerd porn auteur poem.
That was kind of what put him on the map, right?
Yeah. We actually we got an email about it later. We'll read it.
Okay. So,
but yeah, that was I think that was his Austin. He was reading this in some of these Austin slam poetry circles. And that's from there to here. It's all a circle.
From there to Spielberg.
Oh, man. Oh, if this girl walks into if there's like a little like metafiction thing where she like, you know, sits next to him at a movie theater or something, like, you know, introduces himself to her like a Stephen King kind of thing, that would be right. Absolutely incredible.
Or what's his name going up to Tom Hanks?
Oh, yeah, Forrest Gump, Gump
Forrest
and Co.
Forrest Gump, a little cameo, a little break the third wall
please,
cameo.
Please go Metafiction Fourth Klein. Wall. Yeah. And it says, this weirdness and wildness all began when a 13-year-old girl moved in right next door to the big old beautiful cave, and she and the bats became neighbors. So that just brings us to chapter two, which is called The Girl from Leveland.
Right, and this begins with, I know you said when we read probably his last book, maybe his first book too, that there seemed to be a strange omission because everything right around all of his references, I guess our show was the 90s, although it was in the 80s.
Got it.
But the fact that he did not include Mystery Science Theater in his pantheon of nerdness is sort of astounding.
Right.
What I'm leading to is the closest I can get to it is his Opal B flats is possibly a reference to Mr. B Natural.
Wow. Right.
A character that took on a life on our show.
Wow.
Now I'm just saying maybe that's I want to be part of the Kleiniverse
right,
in some
exactly.
small way. So that's my tiny, tiny grasping way to get into his universe.
Rich, because B Natural is obviously a musical joke, and he goes on to, you know, a normal author might put this in there, but this guy goes on to then explain the joke in excruciating
It's unbelievable later.
But, you'll be interested to know. I mean, first of all, we've covered this before, but Ernest Cline was a, you know, celebrity guest writer on one of the newer seasons of Mystery Science Theater.
That's right. I remember that.
So, I mean, in some way, your colleagues. And then this...
Kevin Bacon style, I guess, yes.
And this book, the audiobook, all his other ones were narrated by Will Wheaton.
But oh, yes, who
Will
we worked
Wheaton
with.
Was too shaken from the Elmo attack that happened recently. Mm. He was still... He couldn't do it because he was just...
I think he's still a bad... Somewhere. He might be in a sanatorium, you know, wearing one of those white robes, sitting in the front lawn.
But this audiobook is then narrated by Felicia Day, who is also on the Ernest Cline version of the thing. So your theory might hold up. He's clearly a fan, and maybe just maybe it's in the director's cut somewhere.
Wow. How did he get around after all the things from the 90s and the nerd culture and everything? I don't know.
Here,
I'm a little insulted.
Yes. Well, let's just skip ahead to this. I had an email from a fan who wanted to do this, and it'll be fun to see if you have any memory of it. This is from Dan. He said, "Hello, Mike and Connor. When looking into the narrator for the book, I went down a bit of a Wikipedia rabbit hole, hopefully not about Mexican fleet-tailed bats or whatever.
Sure.
I saw a picture of Felicia Day and Ready Player One, Ready Player Two Armada narrator Will Wheaton in Happier Times at an event called Woodstock. I looked into some of the historical Woodstock events and was surprised at what I saw on July 21st, 2011, at Woodstock version 3.0 at the Balboa Theater during San Diego Comic-Con. Among the guests included were Will Wheaton, Riff Trax, and double-billed Ernest Cline, and one of Connor's favorite authors, Patrick Rothfuss. I was shocked to see Ernest Cline read his famous and beloved slam poem, Nerd Porn Auteur, which I just read some of, to rapturous applause, and he provides a video link. He said, I wonder if Mike had any recollection of this or was simply so shocked he put it out of his mind. And then he has a clip of you and Bill and Kevin taking the stage and are about to show the grasses at your fingertips short. So any memory of this from an event from 13 years ago?
I didn't think that we all did that. I know Kevin and Bill did Woodstock a lot.
This was just, you know, in town. We must have had a Comic-Con.
It was, I think it was Comic-Con.
The next day, yeah.
I don't remember. I do remember that it was full. And as I recall, there was no pattern to the guests. And they're like, well, you'll get on when you get on. Sometimes it goes like an hour and a half. Sometimes it goes like 4 hours. And I'm like, what kind of madness is this?
I do remember that it was the longest show that had ever happened.
And people seemed delighted by the I'll just be frank. I'm not going to call out any names. There were some people who just clearly went up there with garbage and wasted time. And the people just sat there delighted. I'm like, okay, why did we prepare? Like, we're right. Like poring over scripts, like just X-ing out syllables, you know, like maybe it sounds a little better this way. He reads nerd porn and gets a standing ovation for 7 minutes. I do not remember it because we were just backstage.
Yeah.
I recall, I was backstage. There was a small green room and met a lot of very nice people. Met people from bands and stuff. So it was cool. But this was the height of it, right? Everyone was gramming everything or whatever they were doing. You know,
checking in on Foursquare.
Oh, my God. The Twittering was in the Foursquaring. And I had a flip phone. And I made a joke about it. I think it was to like Felicia Day or something. And she goes, dude, it's not funny.
Wow.
Like a mean girl reaction. Yeah, like you really have to get. No, she was trying to sell me on. You have to get this. You can't be doing that. It's not. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah, okay. As they're showing off an iPhone that couldn't even copy and paste, being like, get with the times.
Yes.
How else are you going to become mayor of downtown Johnny Brown's in San Diego if you can't check
that's
in?
Right.
Anyway, well, that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing those links. We will post them. It is amazing just to. You know, not everything about how things change is good, but the fact that that was rapturously received in 2011, and by the time we started this podcast, I mean, was that 7 years later?
Mm-hmm.
People were just like, no, this is, like, we can all agree this is utter garbage. And we don't have to, there's no subtext. He didn't do anything shady, you know, he didn't, like, you know, harass somebody. It was just like, no, just, all we're doing is looking at the text of it, and it is widely agreed that it is utter garbage. I guess we just started paying attention, you know, more to like what was going on here. But before that, you know, hey, the emperor wore no clothes for a while.
That's true. Things change quickly.
Well, the girl from Leveland, is our hero, Opal B. Flats, the weird little girl, and she lives in the Texas Panhandle, which I will admit, I always thought the Texas Panhandle was the thing off on the left side of Texas. And not the top of Texas. I'm in, you know, the Florida Panhandle, the Oklahoma Panhandle. They're both the thing on the left. Texas is on the top. What's going on?
Oh yes, I think I don't know that I ever thought about it, but you're right. That does. I think the whole Panhandle situation is also misplaced. This one doesn't look like a Panhandle.
No,
neither does the Florida Panhandle.
Sure.
It looks like a thing stuck out, like. Because it doesn't look like a pan.
A pan, yeah. Oklahoma,
I mean, Michigan looks
little...
like an oven mitt, right? So you describe it as an oven mitt. And the Indian Head State, it looks, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't look like a pan.
Is that Montana or?
I believe that's Wisconsin.
Okay. I think Montana always looks like a face, too. It's also looking to the left. This is how geographers talk, right? Left and right when they're describing things, but...
I just learned, what's the square, everyone thinks is the fully square state, or the fully rectangular state?
Kansas?
Is it Oklahoma?
Oklahoma has a panhandle.
Okay, then it's not a one with a panhandle. It's one of the western states, I just learned, when it looks like a square on a map. It actually has like 84 borders because the cartographers couldn't figure out longitude and latitude, and so they kept going a mile off and putting the marker, and then they'd get back on track and going. So the actual border is like a big zipper on all sides of it.
Stuff like that is incredible. You know, isn't there part of Minnesota or maybe Michigan that's like just like a little like a circle like across the Great Lakes in Canada or something like that? Just weird geographic entities like that are fantastic.
Well, the UP is just like silly. Like, come on, that's part of the same
state. What are we doing here?
Yeah. Anyway, all right.
It lives in Lubbock, Texas, and this is where we got the first little. Elbow in the ribs as he's showing you how clever he is. It says, Opal B. Flats figured it was probably just a cruel coincidence that her last name was Flats, and she also happened to be born in the flattest place on God's green earth. And it's, you know, it's not a coincidence. It's an author who thinks they're a little clever.
You did it.
As we love to reference on this podcast, the Mr. Woodcock phenomenon from the beloved Billy Bob Thornton movie. But it's not the only time he'll be making a joke here. So please sit on the edge of your seat waiting for the other jokes that are going to come along with our character's name, which was assigned to her by the author.
Well, it comes up right away again because she says, sometimes she and her mama went to a farmer's market in a little town about 30 miles west of Lubbock with the name Leveland, as in level land. So she came up with the... No, they came up with the name Leveland, right?
Yes, it says she didn't like calling it the Panhandle because it was annoying. So she decided to come up with her own nickname for it, Leveland. And then how did she come up with it? Well, there was a town called it 30 miles away, and she called her area the name that already existed.
What? You said, is it Mr. Woodcock? It could also be Dr. Strangelove. In that they do, there's a scene where is it like Lieutenant Bat Guano or something comes in? And then one of the characters goes, excuse me, Lieutenant Bat Guano, if that really is your name. Like, what? You are coming up with the names.
Come on, man. Yeah, you're better than this.
Turn to the audience and go, can you believe this guy's name? You don't get to do that. but yes, so that's what I felt about Leveland.
The name in Leveland is the town west of Lubbock was Leveland, and then she makes it two words, Leveland. I assume that the fact that one of those words is strongly associated with video games might rear its head later. Who knows? I know nothing about this author we're reading. But she says, whenever Grandpa Philo and Uncle Roscoe drove up from the hill country to visit, she and her mama would greet them out in the driveway with shouts of, welcome back to Leveland, y'all. And I just imagined Grandpa Philo and Uncle Roscoe's visits getting less and less frequent. The excuses they make getting more and more tenuous and unreliable as they're like, why do they say this? This is a weird thing to say. We passed the sign for Leveland. It's 30 miles away. What are they doing?
Right. I felt like once these uncles and stuff started showing up, and Opal lived with her mama, Geraldine, who worked as a seamstress and a tailor, starting to get kind of cozy here, aren't we?
That's true. Yeah.
What was that?
Small town.
What was the place? What was the name of where the murder happened?
Christmas River?
No, the Texas.
Oh, the Texas place. Right, the eggnog swilling place.
Yeah,
Sunflower or something like that.
The estates or no Sunflower
ranch. Sunflower Hacienda.
Hacienda. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, interesting.
So yeah.
Well, speaking of the cozy folksiness, it says she worked as a seamstress and a tailor. That's a fancy way of saying that she sewed things for a living. Is it a fancy way of saying that? My dad was a lawyer. That's a fancy way of saying he analyzed legal cases for a living and advised.
I believe that's the term. My dad was a baker. That's a fancy way of saying that he handled bread items.
Ah, okay, thanks.
Baked them for people.
It's like the lemon drink. Wow, that's a fancy way of saying a drink that was made of... but we get more information about our protagonist. Opal didn't like store-bought clothes, so her mom was always making her stuff. And she had a hard time finding anything in the girls' section that felt because she was so big for her age. Her phys ed teacher had once described her as kind of barrel-shaped. And flats is round was a taunt she'd had hurled her way since kindergarten. And, you know, he's sort of been dumbing down things for the kids all along here. You get a sense he really doesn't understand how kids work at all, because if these kids, kindergarten kids, are saying flats is round as opposed to just calling her Opal Fats, like, come on now, please. I remember being a kid. Like, take the low-hanging fruit here.
There was one time where I had to go to my kids' grade school, and me and a couple other dads had, you know, were like, you want to go through the, you know, this classroom and the... And the wives would cover the other classrooms. And the names of the teachers were all, like, immediately turned to each other and whisper, like, well, her nickname is clearly, you know, like, Fatty McFat, you know, whatever. And then I'd say to my kids, like, do you guys have any, do you ever you know, is there taunts about the teachers? They all seem nice. Is there any names? They're all like, no. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's right there. What are you doing?
Yeah. Mr. Fartenstein, you nothing? Really?
Nothing. God. Jeez. Mr. Glasscock, you got nothing. Okay.
Opal's mama, true to Klein things, wasn't just wicked funny. She was also crazy beautiful and sharp as a tack. Also kind beyond measure. So it's not, fortunately it's a girl who isn't describing her own mom as, you know, what was it like, insanely hot? Like if she wasn't my mom, boom, like yes. Type of thing. But it does seem to be something he's a little focused on.
We'll hear about her hands later, I'm sure. Who knows?
And then the first thing you took objection to was the fact that Opal's favorite musician was a fellow named Buddy Holly, who happened to be from Lubbock, just like her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the early 80s. Buddy Holly died in 1959.
59. I guessed 56. I'm sorry, I was wrong. 59 and left. Not a lot. I mean, he was very young, right?
Yeah.
He inspired one of your favorite songs, of course. The Day the Music
Who
Died.
Who Let the Dogs Out? Yes, The Day the Music Died.
But yes, so she listens to Buddy Holly. And I don't know, a little on the nose, the Lubbock thing and Buddy Holly, but whatever. The kids today. But if you're young, I mean, I don't know. Part of me is like, okay, that's fine. Buddy Holly's great. Go, if you're a kid, go look him up. You probably listen to the fidelity of it and go, ah, it hurts my ears, you know. Mm-hmm. So it just seems a little out of place for the kids.
But then again, you know, I liked the Monkees when I was 8. So it's not, I'm not going to write it off just because of that. But
right.
I did like it to say he happened to be from Lubbock just like her. It's like, well, that's, you set the book here. But she walks past his house all on this way to school every day. So she's really sort of obsessed with it and goes on to say whenever she needed a little calming down or cheering up, rave on or that'll be the day or not fade away would always do the trick. So she's in deep on Buddy Holly. Does this make her popular at school? It does not, but we'll get to that.
And she's always drawing or writing in a scratchbook?
Yes.
I think this is just to add to her nerd credentials, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, it says she would practice drawing her favorite cartoon and comic book characters in it, and you know he doesn't list them.
Doesn't list them.
Come on, you listed things for pages in your last book. You could at least give us a couple here, but nope, we just get it. Yeah, and she calls it a scratchbook, which Lauren was opening up a new journal today to put some notes in about what she's going to put in the garden, and I was like, you know, in Ernest Cline's new book, he calls that a scratchbook, and she. You could tell she wanted to get up and leave the room, but she,
You were able to get through the sentence without, like, whatever the nearest statuette that was in her hand. You know, in Ernest Cline's book, bang, whoosh, right on the forehead.
Yeah. And then it gives us there's illustrations in this book. There was one of a Texas-shaped frying pan that had a panhandle in it earlier. And then it has a drawing, one of her own scratchbook drawings of Buddy Holly. And I thought it looked kind of like one of your little hideous underpants guys that you all.
I didn't want to bring it up, but I was going to say, I'm just going to take that out and put it on top of one of my little. It is pretty hideous.
Yeah. Dude,
I think he was a little more handsome than that.
Sure. The hideous sneer, or like a weird looking nose.
The nose is kind of drooping down. The eyes look like that. It does look a little Napoleon Dynamite trying to take the girl out to prom, kind of a drawing. But then it goes on. Then there's kind of a lot about, you know, how I guess they're both nerds. They wear weird clothing and all of that. They both agreed that being... Oh, wait, no, here it is. They gave each other weird short haircuts. Weird comes up a lot. And they both wore weird vintage clothing they found in weird local thrift stores. Like, how weird were the haircuts? Like, what kind of haircut? How weird are they?
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture what a weird haircut is.
Like,
Someone comes to school and there's like, whoa. Like, you know, anytime someone got a haircut, right, you'd have to give them grief, which is a weird kid thing.
Sure.
Like, you got a haircut. Yeah, we all get our hair cut. It's, aha, what, why? But if you came in and, like, your hair was, I guess if you had one of those, you know, super glued mohawks, multicolored, that would be weird.
Sure, that's weird. Or, like, you know, a monk from, like, the 1600s where just has that sort of string of hair. Like,
yeah,
like
the tonsure.
Yeah.
Tonsure, or, that's called. You know, they did that just to make themselves look ugly.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that good mission accomplished. Yeah,
exactly.
Good Lord.
They really came up with the look right away. Like, oh, the barber's like, how will I make you look ugly? I got it. This is no-brainer.
So, yeah, that's weird. And I was looking up, I'm looking up Baby Herman from the classic 80s movie Roger Rabbit. He's just sort of got the top knot almost, like, going up on his thing. Mm-hmm. With a little wisp in the back, that would be a weird haircut for a 13-year-old girl. So
weird, but short, yeah.
It says they both looked weird, dressed weird, acted weird, talked weird, and were weird, and that just plain weirded people out. I thought he was essentially, like, 80s dance movings, the weirdness here, because it's like, give us an example, you know, walking into, you know, the grocery store and pouring Mountain Dew all over yourself in the cereal aisle. That would be weird.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah. you know, jumping up on a table and playing the saxophone riff from a George Michael song.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Weird.
It's, yeah, intentionally weird.
But, or, like, what if the locust swarm came across the level land and you grabbed one of those and shoved a whole locust up your nose? Pretty weird.
That's pretty weird. Yeah. Put on a horse head and go to, you know, the dust storm reporting area where the person is and just dance around behind. It's kind of weird.
If you were the first person to do it, yeah, that's pretty weird. Now it's sort of, you know, you're playing to a type. But,
right.
But no, we just have to take her word on it. And you're left thinking that maybe if there was another city in Austin that was famous for keeping it weird or having a weird reputation people wanted to maintain, maybe this is a place that she's better suited for. I don't know.
It could be.
It might go a little something like this. I don't know.
But it says, so all of this talk about Buddy Holly, and then I believe she does get glasses.
She does, yes.
Oh, but before that, we
talk to her family.
Yeah, we got to talk about her music. Sorry, I skipped over that. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. her father is deceased. His name was Fred D. Flats, and he had the uncanny ability to memorize any song lyric. So that's another Kleinian trope. Our other guy had memorized every episode of Family Ties and stuff like that. And it describes his name, which you speculated, it was part of a silly, long-standing family joke. So everyone was given one of the first seven letters of the alphabet as their middle initial or middle name, so it sounded like a musical note when they said it out loud. So you had Major F. Flats, Philo G. Flats, Frederick D. Flats, Roscoe E. Flats, and she was Opal B. Flats. Folks rarely found the musical note for a middle name joke funny, even after Opal explained it. I'm with the rest of Texas on that one. That's
that seems like, I've never seen this technique before. You make up a stupid joke that everyone goes, oh, you know, like my favorite example of it, Dr. Acula, the Ed Wood thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Opal B. Flats. What? Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Her father, Fred D. Flats. yeah, nobody really likes the joke. Folks rarely found it funny. Yeah, okay. She thought it probably would have worked better, oh yes, with her mother's maiden name, which happened to be Sharp.
Gah!
You son of a... So he writes the crappy joke, dismisses the crappy joke, erases it. Don't think about that. I wrote crap. Forget about it.
Wasn't good.
Let me start again. Here's some crap.
Another coincidence, yeah. Fortunately, though, her dad died in Vietnam, just like Bubba in Forrest Gump. And we get a little bit of before she was born, I guess, he got drafted and died in the Vietnam War. When Opal asked her mama why they made him go over there to fight people he didn't even know, she said there was no point trying to make sense out of it, because nobody dying in any war had ever made a lick of sense. She said there was always other ways of resolving a dispute without resorting to killing folks. So, almost as if this narrator had heard this explanation made in other movies. It just seems like, I don't know, but, a simplified way of it.
As he was being shot, though, Freddie was, at the time, reciting the lyrics to War. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
And he never got the chance to say it again, because that was when a Viet Cong sniper took it.
By the way, they said legend had it that by the time he graduated, he was able to recite the lyrics to hundreds of different songs. Who tested him on this? When did this happen? And did they like clock each other and like, okay, I'm doing the next 8 hours and you do the next and then we'll see. Like how, what?
Well, it says that his friends would play a game where they would tune the radio, but he just always knew it. But did his friends try that 3 times? Would you get bored with it after 3 times of, you know, he knows the words to That'll Be the Day?
Or... Anyway, it was a legend by the time he graduated high school.
Right. I don't know. My high school had cooler legends. Most of them aren't fit to repeat, but like, you know, make something better up, man. And then she, he does this a little bit too. I don't know if this is the same as the Big Old Beautiful Cage, but we're treading into Pappy territory when Opal's mom says the flats were weird and wistful and willful, and the sharps were welcoming, wise, and a little weird too. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be something to monitor. And then it says, it wraps up this section. It ends with a musical note, but it says, Opal was extremely proud of her ancestry and did her best to live up to it. So he hits us with the grade school report with America is a land of contrasts in conclusion. Yes. That type of thing there. Yes. That was pretty funny.
Looking towards the past, but also facing a new future. That's the flats.
But then, she goes on to get glasses. Do you want to describe this? Because there's some good stuff here.
Well, I just thought about all of this. Like, so she gets glasses. She knows that the kids are going to call her Four Eyes,
right?
Which I got glasses in the third grade, and people did call you Four Eyes, and I was always like, they're not other eyes.
It never made sense. And the kids are already calling her Opal B Flats or whatever, Opal B Round. I don't know. It's like,
yeah,
is that a lateral move? Like,
yeah, teachers are saying she's barrel shaped.
Yes.
Anyway, she gets glasses and she decides on the look that makes her look exactly like Buddy Holly.
Yes.
So I'll just read it. Opal looked at her reflection in the mirror and thought she made her look just like Buddy. And then later a teacher says, you look just like Buddy Holly.
So there you go.
No mention of Weezer anywhere in this.
But he makes the... He paraphrases it twice in two paragraphs.
But he doesn't mention it.
That's true.
That's his stock and trade.
I guess it was before they existed. But it's so obvious. But who is that joke for, though? Like, you know, so people are like, hey, these Klein books aren't for you. Like, I was 13 when that Weezer album came out. Like, I've heard it thousands of times in my life. I owned it. I liked it. I'll still listen to it. It's like, if that isn't directly meant to make me be like, who is it for? It's not for the 12-year-old that's going to be reading this book.
I don't know.
I just found it revolting, because it's like, yeah, we know that's the whole point of it. You're just giving us the song lyrics here, and I'm annoyed by it. So like, I don't know. Is it me after I suffer a head injury? Is that who you're supposed to be targeting it for? Come on, man. And once she gets the glasses, the chapter pretty much wraps up, but it does. it's divided by these sort of musical notes instead of like the asterisks. And mm-hmm. it sort of tacks something on at the end that's like, oh, by the way, there's a whole lot of windstorms here in Level Land. Sometimes she has to grab onto a light pole to not be blown away. And it struck me as just something being like, all right, maybe this comes up later. And it just needed to be sort of wedged in here to the end of the chapter. So we'll be tracking the windstorms in this in this Texas Panhandle.
Chekhov's windstorms and holding on to light poles. Certainly something you know about having been to Chicago.
Yeah.
And all right, we'll skip past that. Someday we'll talk about that. Doesn't she say again? Oh, no, sorry. This is an old note. Never mind. That's chapter two.
Yeah. It does say she got blown away like a tumbleweed out of all the way out of her home and her life and everything she'd ever known up there in Level Land. Chapter three is called Going Up to the Spirit in the Sky. And it emphasizes that she is 13 and she is just finishing the seventh grade. Just so I think that's to put ourselves in the... appropriate, we're not sure about the appropriate era, but
picture the mistress of an everlasting being who lives in a pyramid in an ancient land in Mexico. That's the age and the kind of person we're thinking of.
Yes, God.
Someone who makes stews for visiting immortals,
visiting flute playing immortals, yeah.
Right,
and could turn into a griffin.
Right.
Oh, man. I mean, so there's the question for you. You're reading, you just read that book. That guy once started a sentence with a comma. Is this a breath of fresh air, or do you miss the insanity and anything could happen from that? Like, it's hard to say. We've read so little of this one that it hasn't had a chance to really annoy us yet.
Quotes do begin and end. There is that. There's a certain order to it that is refreshing, I guess.
Speaking of bringing order to the universe, if the Buddy Holly direct quote twice in the span of two paragraphs did not convince you that this is still Ernest Cline writing this, I think what happens in this next chapter probably will. She's, returning home from school, she has a week left in school, and is surprised to see Uncle Roscoe sitting on the front porch. And Uncle Roscoe has, again, probably your Coke bottle glasses that make him look like, you know, squints from the Sandlot. Mm-hmm. And he also has his battered old white cowboy hat, which had a little square computer circuit board attached to the band in its front. His uncle had added that personal touch after he inherited the hat from his daddy. So, just like his sister, I guess, he's a little bit of a nerd.
But I thought it was weird when he looked up and said in a deep voice, "Who is the sheriff of 64 squares?" That seemed to touch out of place. But yeah, Klein is wide red, so we know that. So,
That's true. Yeah. He likes to integrate, you know, other popular works into his books. So
sure.
No one could ever.
Yeah, that one, I mean, that also is a Chekhov thing, right? That has to be explained.
Would hope so.
Just say that, yes. And then a little square computer circuit board attached to its band in the front?
I mean, you know, he's a little weird, Mike. He's from a town where people like to keep it weird, so I think that just might be an example of that weirdness.
Well, but again, what? Shit, no, man.
Yeah, right.
Nobody does that.
No, you'd be liable to get your ass kicked. Texas, 80s, computers, Halt and Catch Fire, that Texas Instruments, that whole thing. Maybe he goes on to greater things.
But yes, his glasses, as you say, were round wire frames like the ones John Lennon used to wear. Classic 80s. lots of talk about glasses in this. I don't know. I guess he wears glasses. They're constantly in front of him, so yeah, he's thinking about it a lot.
Maybe there'll be a glasses breaking scene or something like My Girl, another classic 80s drama. But speaking of My Girl, we're about to have some family tragedy. He's sitting there. He's like, you know, he looks up. He's like sort of like weepy. She could already tell by the look on his face something bad must have happened to her mama. And she sits down next to him, and we get this moment. Her uncle sat there in silence. If you're not reading along here, this is going to be like, I don't know. You'll enjoy this. Take a big sip. Her uncle sat there in silence for a moment, struggling to find words. Then he took something out of his jacket pocket and held it out to her. Folks at home, write down what you think he might be about to hand her. We'll give you a second. It was an Atari cartridge with a bright red label that had the word Mega Mania printed on it. Opal took it with both hands and whispered thank you.
Yeah.
Here we go, baby.
What did you all write down in that little pause? Did you like Mama's scratching books that she didn't know existed? Secret scratching books about her love for her child? Diaries? Maybe a key to a closet that she didn't know existed, or
even just some of his famous, venison jerky that he had always been drying and would bring up and was a special treat every time he came there.
Something from her long dead pappy that she'd saved. She took this watch all the way out of. No, it was the Mega Mania cartridge.
His purple heart. Yeah. brief detour here because I want to talk about Mega Mania. I assume you did not go and look it up.
I did go and look it up.
Oh, okay, great.
I saw it when I sent this to you when it first came out and the preview was available. I found this immediately and sent it to you about how it's coming up. But she plays Mega Mania and listens to Buddy Holly endlessly. And so I was like, okay, I've never heard Mega Mania. So I did look it up.
Okay.
So I knew what it was, but I've never seen it and obviously never heard the name before.
I'd never heard of it before. But I went to watch someone play it. I want to just send you the link in real time if you're able to open it up, just so you can see how long you would have lasted with someone playing this in your house. If like one of your kids was like, I'm playing Mega Mania, crank up the volume on the TV.
Okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
Mega Mania.
Maybe skip it a couple seconds just to...
Sure. Will do. It's just coming. Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
It's it's an early 80s Atari game. It's extremely annoying sound. And it obviously, I looked at it, I was like, oh, so it's like a Space Invaders type of thing. There's a ship at the bottom. It's shooting little rudimentary icons that go back and forth across the screen. The guy who uploaded that video... However, Kamikaze 9699 in the description said, this is some of that classic Woodstock 2011 gamer energy right here. If you call it a Space Invader clone, I'll teabag you with my sweaty balls in your sleep.
Oh, I was hoping you would say, classic game. My brother, who just died of liver cancer 6 minutes ago, used to play this with me in my room all the time. My dad would come in and shout for us to turn it down, but we'd crank it up anyway. R.I.P., brother.
I did look for those. We got people who said, best game ever, the happiest memory of my childhood. Another one who said, this was my favorite Atari game. I feel like I'm 6 years old again watching this. And then we got my dad... was the only person in my family to be able to beat every level. He had no idea how inspiring it was seeing him do it so easily and for me to fail every time. He hates me for playing games now. So he's not dead, but it does sound like they're kind of extreme.
A severed relationship is pretty good, too.
That's pretty good. It says that whenever Uncle Roscoe came to visit, for any reason, he would always bring along a new Atari game. So I'm not sure if he just had this one ready to go when he got the call that her mom had suffered a stroke. If he just swung by the game depot and brought it along. Anyway, he has gifted her Mega Minds because her mom is... collapsed at work and has been rushed to the hospital in the ambulance with a stroke.
And so they tear off to the hospital. So he got the call. He says on the way there or whatever, like, yeah, I got the call that your mom was in the hospital, so I wanted to be the one to be here and everything. So, yeah, he was, like, throwing, underwear, T-shirts in a bag, his deodorant, and like, oh, Mega Mania.
Yeah.
I gotta go grab that.
He's like, just Mega Mania, kaboom. Which one do I give her? I don't...
So then we get to this. She, obviously, this is not going well, right? I'll just read this sentence. And when she realized that her mama had stopped breathing, Opal felt the most painful feeling she'd ever felt. A piercing hollowness that cored out her heart and her chest and her limbs and left her feeling empty all the way through. So she did a series of classic 80s dance moves while Prince played on and a John Hughes movie played in the background. Good night, everyone.
So touching. That'll be the day that I die.
So he's really trying to, he's going for it here.
That's a little like ebony dementia, darkness, Ravenclaw way, I think. Like,
yeah.
Piercing hollowness that cores out your heart, brother.
Yeah.
I like that it said the mama wasn't going to get any better. The doctors said there wasn't anything they could do to help her and that she probably didn't have much longer to live. Opal refused to believe them. Opal's doing her own research quickly, and then she dies minutes later. It's like, okay, all right, the doctors were correct. This woman who had a stroke and was on life support wasn't gonna live.
And then another, I don't know, I don't like these turns to the audience thing, this break in the fourth wall thing.
Okay.
I know this part of the story is terribly sad, and now you're probably feeling awful for Opal, because I am too. Like, all right, just, you know, it's you didn't do that good a job at it, buddy. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, fine. No. I understand what's happening here. It's the easiest way to raise the dramatic stakes in a book for children is having a parent die. It's a it's old hat, classic Disney move.
Right. This is the start of her journey. We realize how these things go. Yeah.
Yep. James, Giant Peach's parents dead. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory's grandparents are ill. We understand how it works.
Mm-hmm. And then right after that, we get, this is, again, the author. This is a cri de coeur from our author himself. But unfortunately, she couldn't play Megamania nonstop. She had to write a stupid young adult book that her publisher demanded.
Gah, come on!
What? I'm halfway through it.
Oh, what are you doing? Playing Space Invaders again, Klein? Oh, I swear to God.
My sweaty balls.
I'll make a vow. I'll try out some Megamind. I'll download a emulator and see how long I can play that. Maybe we can...
Megamania. You said
Megamind. Megamind. I'm so sorry. Classic aughts Will Ferrell animated movie. but yeah, I'll give that a shot, because to me it looks virtually intolerable. It looks like something I would have played on a TI-82 calculator in high school for maybe 5 minutes when a class was super boring.
So we were talking about this the other day, Bridget and I, like, you know, when there was a dead hour in TV when we were young, mm-hmm. and it was just like 5 PM or something. And the thing was like, well, you gotta watch TV, right? You can't not watch TV. was yours like video games? Like, yeah, I'm gonna play this. We all know it sucks, but I'm still gonna play a video game because that's what I do when I get home from school, right?
I have a distinct memory of like my friend who had a Nintendo. His dad went to the store and rented a couple games, and we got home and immediately realized they sucked. And it was like, you know, his dad didn't, just doing us a favor. And my friend being like, we got to play this. I mean, otherwise my dad wasted $2 on this. So I was like, what? I'm not going to go outside.
Yeah. Come on. Don't talk crazy. That's dumb.
But yeah, so we got a funeral to go to. That's why she can't play Mega Mania nonstop, is because she's got to go put on her turquoise tuxedo, and he got to wear his, bedazzled gemstone jean jacket to the wedding. So that's getting pretty Texas here, which I appreciate. There's some Texas fashion at this funeral.
We get the sketch of a turquoise tuxedo and the gemstone jean jacket. If you're reading along, you get to see that.
Yeah,
it's pretty nice. Spectacular stuff.
I think it's right out of her scratchbook. yes. And then so they're giving the funeral, all her former coworkers, her former sewing people, to dumb it down for the audience here, get up mm-hmm. and say kind things about her. And then her uncle gets up. And I think her uncle is her brother's husband. I think that was how I picked it up. I don't think that they're actually related, because when they go to the funeral, I think maybe, I'm not sure. It says her uncle walked up there and tried to say a few words too, but he was too choked up to get any out. He was only able to manage a few strangled sobs while he stood there with his gemstone jean jacket glittering under the lights. And I think that was probably also the noise that Klein made when his editor said he couldn't put any Rush references into this. The kids aren't going to know it, Ernest. You can't do it. Like, Syrinx!
Oh, and then so then she gets up and she doesn't have any words either. But she brought along a boom box and she played the movie, or she played the song. It was the song her mama had always told her she wanted to be played at her funeral someday. Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum. Classic 80s, released in 1970.
Nice.
For what it's worth, I hate that song so
really
much.
Wow.
I do not like that song.
It's you know, it's hard to for me to not to associate it with, you know, I'm sure it was in every other beer commercial when I was a kid, so
it does have the it has a classic riff to it.
Yeah,
the opening riff, and very recognizable. But she plays it over and over and over again, which I feel
at the
like,
funeral. Yeah,
at the funeral.
Loops.
Loops at the funeral, which I feel like is kind of coming into a room and, you know, playing a Meatloaf song over and over again, or playing the Pina Colada song. Like, it's an aggressive act, man.
Yes.
That's why jukeboxes don't allow you to, you know, play an annoying song over and over again. They just block you out if you try to do that. Because pissing off the whole bar. Well, here's a whole funeral. Like,
yes, yeah.
Like, should we? So after it starts again on the like the second loop, people are like, okay, I see what she's doing.
She's
gonna
really
play
gonna
it again.
Happen?
And then the third time, it's just like,
I know she's grieving, but like,
right, I think we can just.
So my note was, you don't want me to do this. I said, I vow to do this at your funeral until I get tased, if you know, if it should ever happen. Like,
okay.
Although it says Opal would always chime in and echo her singing the backup vocals in a high pitched falsetto, and you know, I've done that before. It's a spirit in the sky. It's a hard thing not to do. So he clearly enjoys this song.
Have you done it around other people, or do you listen to it on your own? And
I must have been probably in the car. I don't know. Who knows where this song comes on? But it's one of those things you can't resist. It's like the clap along in the Friends theme song type of thing.
That's true.
Or the da da hey 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 hey.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The classic 80s song that was in the Breakfast Club.
Right.
So they bury the mom. They go out to the funeral. You get, this is my first settle the hell down moment. They observe all the tombstones. All the flats and sharps were lined up in a row there, right there in front of them, like keys on a piano. The sound of the book. I hope Felicia Day makes those same sounds when she reads this. A little editorializing. That'd be funny.
Yes. But Roscoe, remember, I guess he's wearing his, a glittering tuxedo right now, but he still would have his hat on, right? You never leave your hat.
I mean, he's a Texan. You don't take those hats off.
So computer circuit board, mm-hmm. staring down at her as he says, like, you can come and live with me. I know that you got no one now. And so can you come and live with old Uncle Roscoe? And she can not even see his mouth moving because his mustache covers the entire mouth. So she nodded yes right away because she loved Uncle Roscoe and she knew he loved her back and that he'd do his best to take care of her. This is the guy who gave her the Mega Mania cartridge when her mother had a massive stroke and died. So he's going to see, he's gotcha. This is clearly a caretaker.
I mean, you, I don't know much about it. I haven't seen much of his work, but there is a Pete Davidson routine because his dad was a firefighter who died on 9/11. And he says, you know, he was probably the same age. And he talks about how, you know, someone's like, yeah, your dad's dead, but here's a PlayStation 2. So if that's the level of guy who's, you know, you could compare this to, it's probably not the best for your protagonist. Doesn't speak well of his mindset or future prospects, I would say.
But we'll end this chapter with this, in case the imagery hadn't caught you yet of where they are. And so off she went, tumbling away like a tumbleweed on the winds of fate. I mean, I assume you had your red pen out and just like, no, no, no.
Sir, please. Yeah.
See me. We have to talk about this.
Yes,
you keep doing this.
You cannot do this in your valedictorian speech, sir. This is inappropriate. And
when I look at the class of Classic 82, I think of us, we all came in here as acorns. No, no, no. And we shall grow into mighty... Stop it, stop it, stop it.
In conclusion, all seven seasons of Family Ties were a land of contrasts.
Webster defines grief as a state of... All right.
Wow. All right. Well, that's the first three chapters. I think that's pretty good for a book that came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Lord knows how many people are reading along with it, or whether they're thinking like Back to Klein is back to the roots of the podcast, whether it's a real book after the last like three we've read. But I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm also curious to see how you do in this brief reel of fanfics.
I was about to say, well, luckily no one had any time to assemble any reel or fanfic, so I get to get away with one. I get a week off. But no, okay.
All right, so this is an abbreviated reel or fanfic, because as you said, it came out yesterday, people didn't have much time. But our beloved Patreon supporters, who are over at patreon.com/372pages, managed to come up with a few. So we have three. We have three.
Great.
And they could all either be real for later in Bridge to Bat City, or they could be fanfic that our devious listeners have come up with. Let's see how you do. Here's number one. As she continued to stare out the window at the silvery disc hovering there over the field, she noticed that the high-pitched whistling sound she'd heard earlier had gradually faded away. Now the night had gone completely silent. Even the crickets and the frogs had all clammed up. Then something else happened that Opal couldn't explain. One second she was standing there at her bedroom window, staring out at the flying saucer. Then, in the blink of an eye, she was standing out there in the field directly underneath it. She was looking straight up at its underside into a blue beam of light that was shining directly down onto her. Opal was disoriented, but she still didn't feel afraid. She tried to raise her right hand to shield her eyes from the light, only to discover that she couldn't move her arm or her hand or any other part of her body. She was frozen in place like a statue.
Hmm. All right, I'm going to say that's fanfic.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. It's just my guess that that aliens aren't the cause of whatever. But that's just completely a guess. I have no idea. So
yeah, who knows? Remember, I think the first line of our motto was like, I was staring out the window in math class when I saw the flying saucer for the first time.
Right.
All right, here's number two. I'll always remember the first day I ventured into the cave. That's because it was the day after Uncle Roscoe took me to see Return of the Jedi at the Paramount Theater in downtown Austin. Everyone seemed to love it. Folks were hooting and hollering. Some even brought lightsabers and were waving them around. But Uncle Roscoe said that Ewoks were only in there to sell toys to kids, and I kind of agreed with him. Still, I admit I got a little choked up when Luke took the mask off Darth Vader and got to see his daddy's face for the first and last time. That's a hard thing to see for anyone who's lost a parent, especially recently. I just pretended like all the blinking I was doing was because I looked directly into someone's lightsaber. Anyway, back to the cave.
Okay. I think that's fanfic.
Okay.
What was Return of the Jedi?
Return of the Jedi.
What year was that?
1983.
Okay, we're in classic 80s.
I mean, so far the book has given no indication other than the Atari cartridge, so I think that's...
Oh, but I thought it was just because it was an old thing that he cherished.
Oh, brother.
So I just didn't know the date. I thought it was contemporaneous. Because he was the one who had given Opal her Atari 2600 game as a gift.
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
I thought he had, like, dusted it out of his saddlebag and taken it over to her.
I think that is contemporary to the thing. I think there was some, like, image I saw on Amazon that was, like, you know, indicated that it was full of classic 80s references or something like that. Like,
oh, okay. This changes my whole whole outlook on it. Okay.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, it says, well, it says it's retro, it's full of Easter eggs, and there's even a nod to 1980s video games. So, yes, it's Ernest Cline. But, you know, that's correct, is that it could be someone forcing him onto a younger kid.
Yeah.
Anyway, number three. Hey, Opal, did you hear about who's coming into town? Ferd had come into the room excitedly. Ferd was usually pretty excitable, and this time he seemed really excited. No, who? I asked. Alice Cooper and Meatloaf, Ferd exclaimed. Ferd was a bit of a music nerd, even though he had claimed to never have heard of Buddy Holly when we met. That was almost a deal-breaker for me, for sure. But I busted out my 45s and played them on the record player my uncle gave me as a gift after the Atari went bust. After that, Ferd was a fan, and we were cool.
Okay, there's a clue. Mr. Loaf has passed away. Alice Cooper's still alive, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Boy, oh boy. I don't know. I'll bite that's real. What okay. the hell?
Okay. All right. So going back to the first one, this is where the flying saucer comes. She's suddenly outside looking up at it. You said fanfic. That is real from later in the book, submitted by Jeff. Something to look forward
to. So just aliens?
I don't know. Maybe the bats are all aliens. It's a big old beautiful spaceship. We'll see. We'll see how this works out. Number two, they went to the theater to watch Return of the Jedi. You said fanfic. That was fanfic. I wrote that this morning when I realized this was going to be a segment. I forgot that this was not written in first person, other than the first chapter, so that could have been a tip-off. And I also said, I think I wrote Return to the Jedi, because I was writing this before I had coffee. So when you questioned that, I was like, oh, crap, you picked up on that. And then it was, you were actually questioning the year. You didn't remember the name of it. Anyway, I thought that was fun. And then so that's one for two. And then number three was Ferd. Coming in, F-E-R-D, Alice Cooper and Meatloaf. You said real for that. That was fanfic submitted by Hayden. Sorry. Hey, it's really early. Maybe by the next one you'll get a much more sense of what's happening. But I feel like this one it must go in some interesting directions.
I'm gonna take batting average again as my... So I'm doing really well right now.
Right.
333.
Oh, you're probably leading all of the majors at this point in time. Yeah. It's a lost art. All right.
I'm hot right now.
Let's read a few emails before the dumb sentences.
All right. Mail call!
All right, we have a couple emails here. We didn't really have time for them last time, but if you've got emails, if you've got Cline-related thoughts, please write in and share. This one is from Eric. He said, I've occasionally wondered what the good version of Ernest Cline would be. I mean... Sure, I wondered what world peace would be like, too. I don't think it's going to happen, Eric. I've decided it would be something like The Book of Lies, a thriller by Brad Metzler I read about a decade ago. Metzler loved Superman and made real-life events around Superman's creation relevant to the murder mystery in that book. The book was pretty average, but as compared to Cline, Metzler, A, chose a pop culture character who's actually iconic as opposed to minutia like Max Headroom and The Great Space Coaster, B, limited his references to a single character as opposed to endless Wikipedia dumps of every property that was ever made into a Funko Pop, and C, actually tied that information into the theme of the book about fatherhood and legacies, contrast Cline's conceit that route memorization is the highest good. And he says, so for a brief moment when the biggest pop culture name drop in Bridge is Buddy Holly, and Opal likes Holly because she specifically connects to his music and it influences her personality, I thought Cline might have learned from his mistakes. Maybe his pop culture drops would serve a purpose. Then Uncle Roscoe gives Opal an Atari cartridge before telling her that her mother had a stroke, and Cline officially yucked my yum. So sorry for that to happen to you, Eric. Here's Brian. He says, to me, the funniest surprise of Bat City is that Ernest thinks he's too articulate and needs to tone it down to make his prose less lofty. Ernest, sir, you are the author who coined the term sixer filleting punks. It needs no effort to convince anyone that you're shallow. And then we got this one from Hayden, who I believe was the guy who wrote the third fan fiction that tricked you.
That fooled me, yes.
He said, I live in Lubbock. In fact, my law firm is on Buddy Holly Avenue.
Wow.
reading chapter 2 felt like a guy you don't like coming up to you at a party, and he's suddenly having the same interest as you and is trying to make a conversation. Yes, it's flat. Yes, it's windy. Yes, the towns around us have names like Brownfield, Level Land, Littlefield, and Plainview. These are the kind of anodyne details people use when they truly have nothing to say. Let me do what Klein failed to do and sum up Lubbock succinctly. Lubbock, the cityest town in America. And then he goes on to trash Buddy Holly. He does say that there is a statue, there's a thing, but he says that he's not a...
He's not a fan.
Not a fan. He says, it did one thing and inspired a bunch of 50s and 60s artists to listen to it and say, I think I can do that better. And I agree with that. I like the Grateful Dead's version of Not Fade Away much better than Buddy Holly's, but, you know, what are you going to do? Not Fade Away is sort of one of those Bo Diddley riffs, right? That's what that is.
I'm not a huge fan. I think if I hear Buddy Holly, I just kind of go like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'd rather hear it than not, I guess, but I don't own a Buddy Holly thing.
It has a spirit that you can get behind, the Pulp Fiction retro cafe kind of thing.
Yes. I mostly think of, whenever I think of Buddy Holly, I think of Waylon Jennings, who was gave up his seat on the plane, right?
Yeah.
Famously, I believe that Waylon Jennings would have died.
Yeah. Anyway. And after he got off the seat, after the plane went down, he tweeted, so that just happened.
Yes.
And then Robert wrote in, sending us we didn't really touch on this, but Opal is described as a mellomaniac, and he mm-hmm. just, which means someone who really likes music. And he sent us in a graph, I guess, of the use of mellomaniac in books. And it definitely peaked in 1900 before having a brief resurgence in 1930. Then really tapering off. But it seems to be coming back in the last five years or so. So maybe this will be the resurgence once every century and a quarter that Mellomaniac deserves.
An explosion of it based on the huge success of this. How many is this like a bestseller already? Did we look? I didn't see it.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I didn't see it. You know, it didn't show up in the Sunday Review of Books or anything like that. But it's been out for a day, and we can certainly weigh in on this. There's all these niche categories in Amazon. So yeah. It's currently the number 5 book in children's farm life books, number 94 in children's friendship books, number 3,586 overall in physical books on Amazon.
Okay.
Which is nothing to sneeze at, but, you know, it's maybe it's a builder. And then it's 7,700 in the Kindle store, number 46 in all children's ebooks in Kindle. So,
okay.
You know, I'm sure he's it could be a grower, but that's not a runaway like Stephen King, Dan Brown kind of thing.
Yeah.
Encouraging. Robert also said that Mega Mania, like most 2600 games, becomes insufferable within minutes and is an assault on the hearing to boot. Opal would have had to turn down her TV all the way to hear Buddy Holly at all while playing this cheap Space Invaders clone.
Oh, so,
watch out in your sleep, Robert.
Yeah, there's a guy who's coming for you. And he's getting sweatier as he approaches you.
All right, let's wrap it up with some dumb sentences.
Dumb, 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 dumb sentence of the week.
All right, dumb sentences of the week. Thanks to everyone who got these in. After a brief period of time, you'll have a lot more time and probably a lot more to pick from in the next go-round as we have more chapters to read. First one, obviously, Elliot, Joe, and Todd all submitted. Never yuck anyone else's yum, as my mama used to say. Harrison and Jim both submitted. Folks rarely found the musical note for a middle name joke funny, even after Opal explained it. Jan submitted, Opal's favorite outfit her mama had ever made her was the turquoise tuxedo she sewed Opal for her 13th birthday. And he just commented that that's 3 hers and 2 Opals in 20 words. In other words, 25% of all the words in that sentence are used to refer to the main character.
Right. Well, I read that as a one of my, and I was trying to make it make sense as I read it because of that.
Yeah, I mean, just throwing a comma before a sentence starts, and that could be Caleb.
Yeah.
Alejandro submitted, so off she went, tumbling away like a tumbleweed on the winds of fate. And he said, You couldn't remember the word rolling, could you? Even blowing could have worked. That was my submission as well. The last sentence in this section, I was like, really? That's how you're going to do this? Like, my first cowboy poem. Alejandro also did a great drawing. I think he's been maintaining this as we go, but it's it has characters from everything we've read, and then he has a key to go along with it, and it's been updated to include Caleb and Uncle Kid and some of the most recent books. So that's on our Facebook and Twitter accounts. I'll share it with you after this is done.
Yeah, nice.
Scott submitted, she said there are always other ways of resolving a dispute without resorting to killing folks, and said, that's a bit of classic Klein oversimplification. Always? Yeah, the rest of the world didn't resolve their dispute with the Nazis nicely enough.
Yes.
Mike submitted, all kinds of families made up of all kinds of bats all living together in peace and harmony in their big old beautiful cave way out there in the hill country. And that ends in an ellipsis, which he calls out. He says it's pointless since there's nothing omitted or incomplete. And second, the first sentence of the paragraph indicates the species of bats. So it's kind of silly to say that all kinds of bats were present. Mike also submitted, I just liked this comment he made. Sometimes she and her mama went to a farmer's market in a little town about 30 miles west of Lubbock with the name Level Land, as in level land. And Mike said, I'm pretty sure that even a young adult reader wasn't going to get confused and think it was named after Horatio P. Level Land III. Jay submitted, go ahead and pull up a chair, kick off your boots and put up your feet. We're playing Mega Mania. Nathan submitted to them, all those bugs tasted better than barbecue. He said, I have no way of knowing, but maybe bats would like barbecue. This only way this makes sense is if a bat is telling this story, which makes the whole book even stupider. I would not write that off. Hayden submitted, there was always plenty of mean old hawks and dumb old owls flying around out there hunting the bats for food whenever they were out hunting bugs for food. And he said, I see the same editor is back. The editor also actually is one of the people who have reviewed the book on Goodreads so far. So you see what they had to say. Andrew submitted, now, according to our encyclopedia, the scientific way to refer to a cave full of furry little flying creatures would have been to call them a colony of Mexican free-tailed bats. He said, what encyclopedia are you referring to? I hope it's referring to this specific cave. Otherwise, it's a very bad encyclopedia for implying that any cave full of bats should be called a colony of Mexican free-tailed bats. And then Keith submitted, they both agreed that being weird was way more fun and interesting than being average, normal, and boring as bathwater. And he said, I think Caleb Barney might have something to say about this. So... drinking the bathwater is what he's implying.
Yes.
Yes. did he drink the bathwater or just... who knows? At this point in time, he might as well have.
Yeah.
Did you have anything that we did not cover?
No, we covered it all in our... I kind of burned mine because they're too good and we only had three chapters to read. I wanted to add, like, he makes up the sharp and flat thing, and then the dad didn't have a middle name. It was just D.
The initial, yep.
I wanted to add that I've never found this interesting, but my dad had no middle name. His name, he just had a first name and a last name. And he always said his dad just was probably drunk and didn't care or whatever, so didn't give him a middle name. But then the other thing was, perfect, if you were going to write, my last name is Nelson. Obviously, my mom died when I was young. My dad remarried, and he remarried a Nelson. So all of my in-laws were named Nelson. And I didn't know which side they came from.
Wow.
So if you're going to write a book, that might be kind
of interesting. Yeah, that's a good detail. Like, yeah,
that's an interesting detail.
So
it was very confusing. We're going to Grandma Nelson's. Like, who? Which one is that?
Yeah.
We're going to Uncle Nelson's, you know, like, so. It was
my tough. Last name is hard and their last name is soft. I thought the universe was playing a cruel joke on me by doing that.
Here's the weird thing. Her name was poop and his was toilet paper. Okay, I don't think.
And they both became gym teachers, now starring Billy Bob Thornton. Yeah, that's fascinating. I like that.
Anyway. All right. Wow, we got through it. Ernest, what are your hopes for the future of this book?
Well, I mean,
clearly
it's
going to get weird. I mean,
yeah, I hope we get Star Wars references. I thought, it must be in the 80s, but I'm not sure. I hope it's in the 80s. Batman references.
I guess the Buddy Holly makes more sense if it is the 80s, then he's not as old.
Yeah.
I guess. But that's right, not, because then she would so have far, to, no clues.
If it was contemporary, she'd be aware of the Weezer song, which has been referenced twice already. So I think that that would be a... Most kids only knew him because of that Weezer song, but I really celebrated the entire catalog type of thing.
Oh, so you think the omission of Weezer gives a clue to... Because that's a cheap way to do it. There will be a Weezer song, you know, but until now it doesn't exist. Am I right? Because we're here in the 80s.
Well, that's like a Gumpian thing, too, of, you know, bumping into, you know, like, hello there, Forrest. My name is John F. Kennedy. I'm running for a local office here. I thought that guy might make a good president one day.
Yeah, it's the old trope. Who was the newsman who read like that and page Walter two?
Yeah.
Not Walter Winchell. I forget his name. Anyway, but he would tell a full story about someone's life and then go...
Oh, Paul Harvey.
Paul Harvey with the news. And that man's name? Spiro Agnew. Like, okay. I wasn't going to guess. But yes, like, wow, you were describing someone who I never knew all these fascinating facts about Spiro Agnew.
And that little boy whose mother put a clothespin on his wiener grew up to be the vice president. My sister recorded it, you know, for whatever reason, we really liked Paul Harvey growing up. He was on the radio. I think we got a Paul Harvey tape in my stocking one year.
Wait a minute. This is the boffo news that you're just glossing over. What in the hell?
The best of the rest of the story. We might have
what?
It somewhere. But my sister recorded an album of her telling family lore stories in as the rest of the story.
Oh.
So it's like, and that little boy who played the piano grew up to be Cousin Joe.
Well, this is clearly an extra for 372 pages.
If I could track it down. My parents have all the tapes.
Wow.
So we'll have to see if we can do it.
But. You loved Paul Harvey.
I mean, loved. It was just sort of like it would be on the radio. It was good. It was wholesome.
Trading your Jimmy Dorsey tapes. And wow.
Surprised it's never come up. So
wow.
Hey, so maybe I can relate to this anachronistic girl liking something out of her time and place.
Like all children my age, we listen to a lot of Paul Harvey. Why is everyone rioting and pulling seats out of the theater? What is happening?
And I'll show you my Walter Cronkite tattoo on the next episode.
Okay. All right. Well done, everyone. Thanks.
What are your hopes?
Oh, well, obviously I guessed wrong. And I was hoping it wasn't aliens. I thought she was going to become a bat through some sort of magic or something and be, I don't know, not a Batman, but be one of their family and they would mm-hmm. take her in. But now there's aliens, so anything, I don't know.
Right.
Well, I just hope that, you know, lots and lots of 80s references.
Yes, that would be... Yeah.
That's my only hope.
Come on, man. Like, you know what we're here for. I think that what my prediction is what happens is that there's this big old beautiful cave. And then the mean old real estate developer is going to be, you know, planning to bulldoze it to put up a polluting factory. And then that's how they end up in that bridge, the famous bridge in Austin where they do fly out from everything.
I think Terry Silver from Dynatox Industries is going to come in.
100%.
And she's going to help them move to Austin and keep it weird. Is that where it is?
Manufacture toxic waste here. I assume so. That's where they keep us so weird. But
yeah.
I'm going to manufacture waste here. What is the waste enough product for? Nothing. I just like it.
There's a business in it.
All right. Well, yes. Thank you, everybody. It should be a lot of fun. It's Klein Pearl. And maybe even going to Klein May. I don't know.
And that's the rest of the story.